Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the ISP Task Force on November 13th. We will call the meeting to order, starting with roll call. Ken Kawamoto.
Here.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Anil Jain.
I'm here. Good morning.
Arian Malik. Okay, not yet. Andy Trescott. Not yet. Clem McDonald.
He's on his way from another meeting, but he should be here in the next couple minutes.
Thank you. Cynthia Fisher? I believe she dialed in. David McCauley?
Here.
Edward John?
Here.
Terry O'Malley?
Here.
Les Linger? Not yet. Jack Poe? Not yet. Raj Batwani?
Here.
Ram Charan, Ricky Bloomfield, Sasha Termott,
here,
Scott Weingarten, Cheryl Turney, Tamer Fakowry,
here,
Tina Esposito, not yet. Valerie Gray did indicate she was going to be absent, and Victor Lee. Okay. Did I miss anyone from the top of the roll call? Okay. Great. So we'll circle back and check back later for those that may have joined late. At this point, before we turn it over to our guest presenter, I will hand it over to Stephen and Ken for any opening remarks.
Stephen, if you can lead us up on this, that'd be great.
Sorry, I didn't quite catch that. Was that Ken?
Yeah, Stephen, if you want to lead us off. I think you're muted probably, Stephen.
Yeah, sure. Sorry about that. Good morning. Well, welcome, everybody. We wanted to welcome you back to our next meeting. We continue presently in our journey of exploration regarding referrals and care coordination. You'll recall that at our last meeting, we spent a lot of time thinking about the 360X standard, which is work that's been going on under the auspices of HL7 for a number of years now to look at what are the basic components of closed-loop referrals between a referring provider and a consulting provider, and looking at how to leverage standards to support that workflow. We have said that as part of the scope of this inquiry, we also want to talk about the care coordination, which goes on subsequent to and sometimes in parallel with referrals, that really involves the need to communicate bidirectionally between different members of a patient's care team. So what we've done today is we've invited Dr. Louis Moss to join us to make a presentation on the direct protocol and where it came from. This, of course, the direct protocol underlies the 360X work, though I think we're going to discuss later the fact that the actual functionality of messaging and referrals doesn't necessarily have to be built on top of direct, but within 360X, it has been built on top of direct, and we want to understand direct as really the current state to support messaging between members of a care team, including potentially with the patient and their caregivers, as well as with clinicians and others who are involved. So we're trying to kind of lay a foundation to understand the various standards that exist that are used to support this very important use of Health IT, and then we will build upon that to develop some recommendations similar to the work that we did around orders and results. There has been some discussion in the background about the fact that in some sense orders and results are almost a special case of this kind of messaging, the idea of a message going from one actor to another, you know, either requesting a test to be done, a procedure to be performed, a referral to be performed. So there's some sense in which we're kind of thinking about this holistically, but we're also trying to keep it in bite-sized pieces around these specific uses that we identified early on. So, Louis, I see you're on the line. I don't think I heard you, but I do want to welcome you. But first, Ken, do you have anything you want to add to that by way of background?
No, I think that's right, and I think what we've heard so far is there's a lot of great work starting in this area, like the 360X project, but that there's still probably a decent amount of piloting work that needs to happen. So probably not as good of a parallel to what we experienced in the orders and observations topic that we covered earlier, where there's the work was already fairly mature, and it was basically just to encourage that direction. So I think what we want to continue doing is hearing about what's being done, but I think the next step in this area might be less saying, hey, this is a standard we should really advocate for, and more we should advocate for more pilots that meet the functional needs that we've been discussing.
And I'll just respond to that by saying, and I think Louis will set us up for a good discussion here, that really a lot of tremendous piloting and use case implementations has been done, built on top of Direct. I think the 360X that we heard about last time is really but one of those. There have been a lot of success stories of people using Direct for all sorts of purposes, and I think Louis will give us a preview of that, and then we can discuss that with him subsequently. So, Dr. Moss, would you like to perhaps introduce yourself and your background before you head us into the presentation?
Sure. Thanks very much. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. So my name is Louis Moss. I am currently the Direct Project Coordinator. I'm also the Chief Technology Officer for EMR Direct, which is a health IT vendor that works in the Direct Project space as well as a few other interoperability standards. I am both a physician and a scientist. I was a practicing radiologist in San Diego for over 10 years, and I did scientific work in the design of medical equipment and signal and systems processing back in those days. I've now moved entirely into the health IT space, so trying to bring all of those experiences together to improve the delivery of care here in the United States and anywhere else that is interested in using our standards that we're putting together. Within the EMR Direct, we joined Direct Project a long time ago, about 5 years ago, right as the first standard was being published. And since that time, we've continued to work through the with that community to improve that standard and build upon the related standards that are promoting communication between different vendors. So essentially what my company does is produce software that lets various health IT vendors basically plug Direct messaging and other standards right into their products without a lot of work so that they can then communicate across to different vendor platforms following these standards. So to your comments about pointing at various standards and such, I think Direct Project is the Direct protocols and their associated standards for notification and transmission of information, especially transitions of care, are pretty well established. This has been in certified health technology for since the 2014 edition of ONC's certification program, and the first products with Direct functionality were rolling out into the real world. Certified products is, back 5 years ago almost, four years ago. This has been around, and the networks built on this protocol have grown and primarily pushed initially by the regulatory influences that required this particular use case to be implemented by by folks, but after that network reached a sort of a critical mass of sorts, lots of other people began thinking about, well, what else can we do now that this network exists? So I did send some slides to your team. I don't know if you can review them later if they weren't there in time for today, but it's basically a little general background about Direct and then a little more focused background on some of the more recent work that's that we've been doing in expanding it to general use cases, not just the initial transitions of care use case that was formulated out in the ONC procedure. So I don't know if you want me to focus more generally on Direct Project or more on the how it refer or how we are looking at using it in things like closed loop referrals and other use cases.
And, well, Lewis, this is Ken. Who did you send the slides to on our team?
Hi, this is Sarah. I'm just sending the slides to the folks to be able to present them right now.
Perfect. So we'll have that up in a second. and I think in terms of the context, it'd be really useful to get your thoughts on where are the gaps in what we can do, and clearly from the end user perspective, this is still seen as an important issue. So what is it about the current technical infrastructure that and the way we're using it that is leading to this still being perceived as an important issue?
Sure. So I think lots of you are, I see some names here who I think would be intimately familiar with the Direct Project, but just in a general overview, just to start simple there, a need was perceived some time ago that a standards-based secure mechanism to electronically push health data from one location to another was needed, that was vendor independent, reusable, much like the fax network that it was hoping to replace existed at the time, just something that you'd plug into the network and you could then communicate with the folks that were already on the network. So from that and their original work, a couple of different technical implementations were discussed, but the ultimate decision was to base the mechanism on a combination of essentially conventional internet email coupled with the security, confidentiality, and integrity that was provided by public key cryptography. So this is slide two, if you want to catch up there on the essentially, by giving everyone a direct address, they would be able to, much like they do with the regular email, communicate with one another with arbitrary payloads, pretty much like you can do with your regular email, but covered with the security of SMIME and X509 certificates so that this would, you know, be compliant with the different regulations that protect the privacy and security of health information. And then with some additional potential to include some assurances about identity, what is the sending endpoint, what is the receiving endpoint, basically to create messages that can only go to a certain location, can't be read by anybody else, and with some ability to be certain about where it came from. All right, so next slide, please. So this came out of the original meaningful use incentive program and the ONC certification program, and the technology was required in health IT. One of the catch-22s of that, the double-edged sword, if you will, is that essentially only one use case was really defined, and that's the transitions of care. So one of the limitations to get to that, to your point on that, is that many of the implementers that built this out essentially built it out in a very limited way that covered exactly that use case and was not intrinsically extendable in the way that was envisioned initially when the protocol was built. So although the network has grown substantially, and this 1.4 is an estimate based on numbers from one of the big networks, the connected users in this network have been sending these transitions of care fairly effectively, some systems more than others, some localities more than others, but hospital discharges are a very common use case, automated push of discharge information to primary care physicians, to for transitions to skilled nursing facilities and other post-acute care facilities, things like that, and even referrals between physicians on the ambulatory side or transfers back to hospitals. That type of data is was fairly well defined in the original use cases that were laid out in the regulation. But nonetheless, people want to do more, right? Once you have this ability and you can see that you can push this data out of your system and push data into a system, because the regulation also required the ability to receive, display, and incorporate data that came from other places, it wasn't long before folks realized you could do a lot more, especially in the areas of care coordination, keeping records in, complete, much better than faxing data. If you get the data electronically, you can incorporate it right into your longitudinal record. And then more things started coming out. The original view was this might have more human interaction, but ultimately people started designing automated workflows and leveraging that environment. This essentially, you've built this network that can transfer data to go beyond just what you can do with the original payload, which was the CCDA, XML structure document, essentially a slight variation on the continuity of care document in most cases. So people wanted to do different workflows and different payloads because ultimately Direct is primarily a secure transport to get data securely from point A to point B in a healthcare in a way that complies with healthcare regulations. So there's a few notes here about some of the ideas people were interested in putting in, but we can go on to the next slide. Just covering some of the limitations of what were in the original regulations, and some of which has been addressed by the 2015 edition, where some of the early complaints were, well, the system only gets CCDAs and I can't send anything else. Well, later, the later certification program expanded this to include text and PDFs and XDM messages. But one thing that the implementing community and folks that are, kind of on the supporting side of the technology realized is that a lot of this data didn't really have a good way to include patient context. You get an image attached to an email, and you have to kind of figure out who does that patient belong to and how can you do that in a reliable and automated way. For a CCDA, that data is encoded right in the CCDA. And for a PDF, maybe you can scrape it out of the data or not, but for other types of data, it's even more difficult. So XDM is clearly has a lot of context integral into it. It's clinically focused, and it does have a very robust vocabulary for expressing many of the same concepts. And so one of the things that the Direct Project community considered was emphasizing XDM more. But we realized there were some use cases that XDM didn't really work effectively for. Some use cases that included a large amount of data that was small in individual message size, such as say, an HL7 ADT message, things like that. There's a lot of overhead in an XDM package to carry something that's, a few hundred bytes long. Also, some of the workflows that we were interested in reusing this secure network for just didn't really fit the XDM model at all, such as encapsulation of API calls, where the direct messaging was used for all those security-related items that I mentioned, a secure way for hospital A to talk to post-acute facility B without having to build a VPN every time or exchange secure credentials manually. That same transport tunnel can basically be used to carry API transactions, and that was not something very expressed for very well carried in XDM. And a lot of the vendors just never really built out this stack to support the XD metadata. So it was considered, but we decided we would try to make something simpler and more universal that could carry additional workflows and payload types that weren't necessarily available with XDM. And then we also recognize CCDAs are not always for transitions of care. And if you just received a CCDA via direct, how would you know? Well, is this the standard ONC 2015 edition transition of care use case, or is this supposed to be something else? So these were the limitations that were recognized and discussed by the community maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago this conversation started. The output was to this context IG I'll share briefly with you. There's information in these slides that you're free to review with lots of links at the end to some of the supporting documents as well. So if we go to the next slide, please. This is basically summarizing what I've said, the things that we wanted to do with Direct, so we can skip over this. Essentially, what the work group decided that we rewrote an implementation guide. It's you may recognize the implementation guide for expressing context in direct messaging is the title. It's in the ISA as version 1.0. Version 1.1 was completed earlier this year. And is minor updates to version 1.0. Essentially, the idea for the technical folks is there is that some of the metadata is expressed in a human-readable plain text attachment that goes along with the direct messaging, or in the direct message, along with some header metadata to so that automated processes can find it. The idea here is that, well, when you extend a standard, it may take a while before everyone adopts the extension, or maybe they never do. So we wanted something that even if you didn't adopt it, wouldn't break the existing implementation, and it would potentially even be usable by someone who didn't support the newer extension. So by making it human readable, at least it's there. If necessary, it can be viewed on screen even to help people match things up with a patient manually or with a workflow manually. But the key idea is that it identifies the workflow right in the metadata. And it's these are the initial set of categories and actions that were defined. In 1.1 we added this error category, which I could talk about for a long time, but I think it's a little bit of a tangent. So I'll just leave that. Anyone who's interested in that can let me know, and I can share more information about that. But essentially, broad categories of data workflow types and broad actions that essentially follow in a relative sequence. So for example, the initiator of a who wanted to order a radiology study might include the CCDA, but with the metadata tags of radiology/order. And potentially in that CCDA, there would be the information to determine what the order is, or it might be expressed in an attached PDF of a signed order or something like that. But whatever it is, the idea is that the receiving system can put this into the queue for the folks that handle radiology orders or the automated system that handles radiology orders. When the result is returned, report returned by the radiologist, it could be sent back as radiology/report. On the next slide, there's a transaction ID that is used to tie these things together, which is, I'll show you in the final example, but there are also patient identifiers where each party in the transaction as the message goes back and forth can be attaching their own patient IDs to this list so that as the circle grows, each party can find itself in its own local reference, or if it recognizes the IDs of other parties in the communication, it can use that for cross-referencing. Many of these fields are optional because not every communication will be about a specific patient, but many, if not most, are. Next slide, please. If you don't know the patient ID at the other facility, or you can include various patient matching attributes This list was extended in version 1.1. It's essentially based on LDAP names with a few additional elements added by the group that were felt to be especially useful for patient matching. You supply what you know, and the receiving party can use what from that list what it wants or what it can. If we can move on, please. Information for the ability to express purpose of use was felt important. Basic purposes were put there that we anticipated would be used in early iterations of this implementation. Obviously, all of these lists are extendable. The IG has made the list official as far as if you want to extend the list, it would require a new version of the IG, which would be a version bump, and the version is expressed in the metadata, so people would be able to build a system that can know what to expect rather than just have a bunch of arbitrary tags. Next slide, please. Here's an example of what it looks like. That's a complete metadata attachment. Generally, you know, I say it's human readable. It's more or less human readable. If you had to look at this, you would at least see type radiology report and patient name John Jacob Doe. I think, you know, you probably would be able to figure that out. The patient ID after the colon, maybe you'd figure it out or not, but obviously this was intended for a machine to read in an automated manner, but with something that could fall back potentially to a human reader. So five lines to look at compared to some of the other metadata options we had that, you know, were pages of XML. This was felt like, you know, maybe it would work even in a limited, somebody who just has, say, a webmail interface to access Direct may still be able to make use of this. Next page, please. The actual email, if you're familiar with direct messaging, it basically looks just like regular email. One extra header tag added there in blue just to signal to the receiving system there's context attachment with the CID or content ID tag to help them find it. The rest of the direct message looks the same as any other direct message except on the next page. You'll see the metadata attachment just gets stuck in there. As another MIME part, which another attachment, if you will, if you can go on. And then the rest of the data, there's a PDF encoded in the message, and then that metadata refers to all the other attachments. So if you have to talk about multiple patients, you'd still have to send multiple messages, but you could send multiple attachments with one piece of metadata. Next slide, please. We've done some implementations. There are several prototypes of this that were already in the field. This data is, this slide is a couple months old already, so we have tried this out in a few Connectathon situations. And based on the feedback from those scenarios and those test cases, we did make the revisions to version 1.0, which was a draft for trial use, and released 1.1 earlier this year, which is the actual normative version, first normative version. Obviously, Direct Project Implementers Work Group continues to talk about this from time to time. We continue to get feedback. There's a couple of different ideas floating around about how to continue to improve this, but this is where we're at. I think that's the end. We have one more slide. This is more of a word map of different things that we've heard people wanting to do with context, or different use cases and workflows that could be supported by context. So obviously a wide range of things. A lot of people very interested in care coordination in particular, and I'll leave it at that. So that's the end. The next slide is just some references. You can find the PDFs and the for this standard and some of the standards it relies on at the end, as well as my email address if you have any questions or any ideas that you have about how we can continue to improve this context IG and the direct standard, please feel free to let me know. So I'll stop there.
Great. Well, Louis, there's a hand up from Aryan. Aryan, do you want to comment or ask your question?
We don't hear you, Arian. Darn it, that's the mute button. This is a great overview, really fantastic, particularly for somebody who knows nothing about direct. That was a joke. Anyway, the idea of universal context is incredibly useful. One of my observations has been that the direct protocol was by design transport only and was content neutral, but that the content experience is what defines the user experience and the clinical experience. So most physicians' frustration if they have an experience with direct, I'll say their experience if they have an experience with direct is formed by not by what goes on behind the scenes in making sure that a package of data gets securely from point A to point B, but is heavily formed by what's going on at the content layer, and in particular about how their EHR renders the content layer. And 95% of that context is defined by how clinicians receive the consolidated CDA, and in particular whether they receive what they're expecting to receive, which is a human-formatted clinical narrative, human-readable textual narrative written by another clinician that contains the essentials of the case, or whether they receive instead the classic 45 pages of garbage facts that is the typical rendering mode that many EHRs provide when a consolidated CDA comes through. So the idea of additive context is incredibly useful to address the problem of message content that comes in without a context, but has the direct community or the transitions of care community addressed some of the content layer issues that are more defining of the user experience that physicians have when they receive direct messages?
So I think that question's for me.
Yes, please. Thank you.
So in part, the CCDA requirements, unfortunately, are pretty specific as to what is needed for to be considered compliant with the certification program, right? So by its nature, it's going to include sections that may or may not be relevant to a specific workflow. It's really more of a summary record. So I think the point that you're making, that I agree with, is that these standard transitions of care CCDA isn't really the appropriate payload for every workflow, and that's definitely true. And in some limited use cases that are not supported by all vendors, and there's 400 some vendors that have implemented this in one way or another, there are new ways to present and carry payloads that are more workflow appropriate for other workflows. So as far as where to put that narrative or how to express it, if you start from the position of, well, here's what I have to carry to have a certification program compliant CCDA XML file, well, then you're going to be, of course, limited by what that CCDA file can carry. If you take the view that CCDA file is intended for a very specific use case, and if you are doing a different use case, you don't necessarily have to carry that payload or that specific payload, well, then you could run into issues of a system that is only expecting that kind of payload is going to probably not be very workable if it receives a CCDA that's structured differently or has different elements, or if it gets some other type of payload. So I think there is a catch-up period that's going to be needed as implementers and health IT vendors kind of move from the 2014 very one use case workflow specific implementation into the 2015 edition, which at least allows for more payload types without crashing, if you will, that they have to be able to accept a wider variety of payload types, which is more towards the long view of payload neutrality, agnostic, really. And that I think in building out that type of system, the next logical step is to, start thinking more like to be able to handle even more types of payloads as opposed to just a subset of payloads. But, how long will that take? I can't really tell you that. People are thinking about that. Some of the vendors out there already have a more payload neutral interface. It doesn't necessarily entirely address your question, but it's a step along the way to, that type of flexibility.
Got it. Thank you. And one follow-up question, if you would. You used email headers as the context metadata. Did you contemplate using a FHIR attachment to hold the context metadata? And maybe the answer is embedded in what you just said, which is you're looking for complete payload neutrality and went with the email header approach. But just curious as to why or what the trade-offs were between an email header and a mandatory FHIR-based attachment for providing
right.
Context.
Right. So the idea in the metadata was actually structured after other email report types, like the disposition notifications and status notifications in the email standard, which are essentially header, colon, value lists. So the idea was that this would be something that would be renderable in an email client that didn't understand anything. And still give the opportunity to be human readable, because obviously the email headers were designed to be human readable and machine readable back in the 60s and 70s. And so the idea is essentially the same. So a couple of different standards were considered to carry that metadata, but ultimately in the interest of simplicity and consistency with email and hope that it would be somewhat readable to a dumb client, if you will, not the person, but the application, that we would follow a presentation format similar to other email-related standards. But obviously, FHIR is one of the payloads that we talk about a lot. There's a lot of excitement about how context helps direct BA transport for FHIR. In fact, you can, I didn't talk about this in the presentation, but you can actually use direct as a conduit for query response using the FHIR RESTful API. Instead of HTTPS, you can use direct as the backbone now. That obviously would make sense if you had larger queries or you didn't need an immediate synchronous response, but any arbitrary API call can be carried using direct for security and transport, so that it, basically you can effectively carry HL7, V2 transactions, FHIR RESTful APIs, or any other HTTP-based API that you could think of.
Thank you.
David, you have your hand up?
Yeah, thanks. Thank you for the good presentation. I, too, know something about Direct, at least in the early days when we first got it launched, and it's really nice to see the progress that's been made. I would, however, caution, let me just back to the history a little bit. We had many debates in the early days about whether Direct would become essentially a general purpose API mechanism between systems, given that it did in fact create a secure channel, which is no small accomplishment. But I think the dominant feeling back then was that Direct was intended to be human mediated, like email, on which it was not only based but actually implemented, and that attempts to try to make it an automated way for systems to interact with each other might get us into trouble, that there might be better ways to do that than trying to essentially piggyback complex automation on top of what was fundamentally a human-mediated email channel. So I like the context headers. To me, that makes good sense because they are human-readable, and they are friendly for humans deciding what to do next. They're not intended to automate processes in the background. And I would urge the direct community to resist that temptation to try to do too much automation using direct as the channel. You know, that said, it might well be that the direct security context that can be established between two systems could be used to establish other kinds of channels, reusing some of the security infrastructure, but not necessarily trying to force transactional activity on top of S/MIME containers, which just aren't really well suited for that. So, and I think the 360X is right on the hairy edge of whether it's crossed over into trying to do too much automation. I think the consensus of the implementer so far is that it is okay. I would defer to those folks with direct experience using 360X pilots as to whether it works well enough for us to endorse it. But it's right on the edge of getting to being too complicated for a simple email interface.
You know, David, this is Stephen Lane. I think you raised some really interesting points, and I think that this is really one of the challenges for our task force. We have people on the task force with a broad range of backgrounds. So some of you very technical. We've got people on the call who are involved in the birth of Direct, and then we have people who are really here kind of representing a much more kind of patient-centric, layperson type perspective, though it's hard to categorize any of us really as complete laypeople. But I think that our challenge here is really to determine or to try to understand what is the state of these standards and what is needed. You know, and what we've heard in Louis's very nice explanation of what's been baked into Direct version 1.1 is that a lot of work has gone into acknowledging the limitations of the first iteration of Direct that, as we've heard, we've all been party to over these past few years, and trying to figure out what is needed to go forward. And my understanding is that there's some controversy, and I think you called it out, David, that, you know, is Direct the appropriate standard to move forward, to automate more of these processes, with the closed-loop referrals in 360X being one example of that. But we heard about a whole host of other opportunities that Louis mentioned, orders, results, conversational messaging, and other use cases that people are trying to put Direct to. And then at the same time, we have the ongoing evolution of FHIR. And I think for our group, the struggle is to really understand what we, you know, if we are going to be able to suggest one standard or another or some combination of standards that the ONC and others should support to help move this forward. You know, and I, for one, find this whole area very confusing because there are experts who kind of have opinions, sometimes at variance with each other, and I know are trying to work these things out. So I'm really curious, you know, from the perspective of the you know, the other members of the task force, how we may, you know, how we move forward and how we add value given the state of this discussion.
Yeah, sorry, just one comment to that, Nick. I agree with that perspective. I think one of the things that worked in the orders and results phase of the work that this task force did, and the cadence that we got to that I thought was incredibly helpful, is this task force has clinicians who are in daily practice dealing with the problems of treating patients and the problems of the existing mechanisms of interoperability. And it was incredibly helpful to hear the real world of orders and results and then compare and contrast that with the level of standards development. And I think in that case, we concluded that there was a standards adoption gap relative to what was available in the standards community. But I generally think that framework of let's describe the clinical experience, describe the high target gaps in the clinician experience and the clinical care experience and value-based care experience, et cetera, and then backtrack that to what the standards gaps are, and then backtrack that to what the appropriate mitigant is. And in this case, it may not be everything's there and we need to go do something. We just need to spur adoption. It may be that, you know, pieces are here and pieces are there, and we need to have a more coordinated approach, or we may need to change tracks or what have you. But I think that separation of here's the clinical experience and it's broken, or here's where it's broken, here's the standards that exist and here's what's done, and then, you know, maybe piece together at the end what gaps exist and what we can do to fill the gaps. That framework seemed to work really well in the orders and results case.
Steve, this is Holly Miller. May I say something?
Hold on, Holly. We're trying to clarify here. We have a precedent of having task force members speak first. So I want to be true to that until we have clarification from our ONC team how we're going to manage this. David, you have your hand back up again.
Yes, Stephen, I just wanted to echo, I think that you raised the fundamental tension nicely. And with respect to direct, my comments maybe were a little bit abstract. I'll just get a little bit more concrete. I fully support the notion of expanding the range of content that can be moved back and forth with direct, but using human mediation as the gateway. What, in other words, think of it as just exactly like what you use email for on your desktop. You can send Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, you know, PDF files. You can send all sorts of complicated material back and forth with your colleagues, but you don't let your email take over your computer and do things in the background when you're not paying attention. And I don't think direct should be just like email. Target the things that get sent with faxes, eliminate the fax, make all those things flow over direct channels where humans can dispatch them appropriately, and then leave deep API automation to a different space. So that's where I would draw the line. And 360X, I think, is, you know, I think we can make it work, you know, as sending referrals back and forth. I would just be leery of trying to automate too much of it.
Thanks, David. That's really helpful. And Holly, sorry, I didn't mean to be rude at all, but I just wanted to see clarification on our protocol here. So why don't you go ahead and share your thoughts?
David, I appreciate what you're saying, but I can tell you in the field that one of the beautiful things about direct is that there is discrete data that's being exchanged, and that it's possible to integrate that discrete data EHR to EHR, which facilitates decreased duplicate testing. It facilitates avoiding adverse drug events because there's not transcription errors. And in fact, there's much demand in the field used when clinicians use this for increased automaticity that's enabled by context that allows for appropriate routing. And so if what we want to achieve is to decrease provider burden of documentation and of managing and caring for patients safely, I think that there's enormous possibility. And I think that it is quite different from email.
So I think that this is one of our key challenges within our task force. Again, as people who, you know, on the whole are not deep in this space, to determine how we want to comment, what we want to recommend to ONC. I think, you know, listening to Louis's discussion of version 1.1 and what it's attempting to accomplish, sounds to me as a clinician, you know, very exciting. I like Holly, I'm well aware of the challenges that we have experienced attempting to use Direct for even the most simple email-like exchanges between providers and other clinical members of the clinical care team. There is a whole community of folks who think that Direct would be appropriate to support conversational messaging between patients and providers and other members of their care team. And I think there's just a lot of open questions. I mean, obviously a tremendous amount of work has gone into Direct and continues to be done. There are great opportunities and some tremendous successes. And I just don't know, I really don't, whether this committee or this task force is in a position to say, yes, you know, we think Direct is great and the ONC should continue to push it forward and it has all of these opportunities to accomplish more in the field, kind of in the way that Louis was appropriately laying it out, or whether or not. And I'm really interested in people's thoughts on that. Les, I see you've got your hand up, and Sasha, and you had weighed in on the chat, so maybe it would be great to hear from both of you.
Les, please go ahead. If you're talking, you're muted.
Les said in the chat he has to dial in, but this is Sasha. I think,
please.
You know, my perspective was that I was really resonating with Arian's suggestion a moment ago that one of the things that was helpful to our previous approach and sort of knowing what technical standard would make the most sense would be clarifying sort of first what are the exact gaps that we would suggest that ONC prioritize solving. Because if we mapped out and said, you know, in a direct messaging workflow, the primary challenge is actually knowing the address of who you're going to message versus, you know, being able to associate the messages with the appropriate other metadata from the order that it would be related to, for example. Obviously, those would lend themselves to very different technical next steps. And I think that might help give us some nice context to, even if we aren't able to recommend a particular standard, at least recommend priority areas of focus.
That sounds great. Let's see, Les, are you back on?
Yes, I am. Thank you. I just wanted to comment that it seems really exciting how much a small amount of state information can really enhance the Direct protocol. I think that having a small number of categories like that is a good start. Obviously, it should probably be linked to some kind of ontology of doctor-patient communications or doctor-to-doctor communications to try to strengthen what those categories are, recognizing version 1.1 very early in the process here. But also want to make the comment that Direct is a route to send messages is just what it was supposed to do, is that we're kind of taking a protocol that was supposed to parallel a fax machine and continue to extend that. There's only so far we can push this, and one really wonders how much having a fax machine on steroids is really going to be the solution to interoperability.
Thanks, Les. David?
Yes, just to respond to Holly's thoughtful comments, I fully agree, Holly, with the notion that we should support automated routing using these context headers. If a vendor wants to build an inbox that understands inbound referrals get routed a certain way and it can do that by parsing the headers, that makes great sense to me and would be consistent with uses of email. But if the request is landing in somebody's inbox, my assumption is that we probably, and that request might have embedded in it sufficient context encapsulated as a FHIR bundle or a V2 bundle to be determined, sufficient context to determine whether it's appropriate to accept the referral or not. That makes good sense, but I'm not sure we would want to make the requirement be that Direct is sufficient to actually transact the acceptance of that referral in an automated fashion, because my bet is that the edge cases are so numerous that you'd have stuck systems. So there's some fine line there that makes good use of the appropriate technologies and of the human skills that offices deploy to do this kind of stuff all day long. And I'm open to being convinced of the exact right place to draw that line, but I think we do need to be respectful that we shouldn't push direct too far. How far that goes, I don't know, but let's go figure it out. Somebody, I know you guys are working hard on it, and I think that's great.
Great.
And David, by the way, I like the framework of let's look at the sources of faxes and see what we can do to kill 95-99% of the sources of faxes in a typical clinical workflow.
I also like that, Ari, and I think that, you know, when we clearly there has been a challenge, you know, laid out by Sima Verma and others to try to drive the fax out of healthcare, you know, where it's not serving a purpose, and where we have opportunities to improve the efficiency and the security and the reliability of that data transmission. It certainly does seem that direct as a protocol has the opportunity to do that, though as we've seen in real life, it has not been implemented with sufficient consistency either by providers or by their vendors to really be able to do that. And I wonder whether we, as a task force, are in a position to support that. Not as David said, not expecting direct to be all things to all people or to be able to accomplish the kind of, you know, deep automation and integration that we also desire, but looking at an opportunity for the task force to see direct for, you know, for what it is and what it can be with some modest advances and continued support in order to help us accomplish that goal. So I'll leave that there, but Vasil has his hand up. Vasil also we've invited as a subject matter expert. You'll recall Vasil helped give the presentation last time about 360X, so has a lot of experience here. Vasil, what can you add to this?
Hi, I wanted to agree with again with Arian and with David about the need to focus on the experiences, the gaps, and what we want to improve and where to draw a line. And when we talk about faxes, if you look at the fax-based workflow, there's a lot of manual work that happens with faxes. And just saying that we'll exchange just the communication of the fax with a direct message and then continue doing the manual work after that just doesn't seem that this is a good enough target for this group. A lot of work currently happens now within an EHR system or within an automated system. And so we need to have to, we need the ways to combine both the communications and the work that is being done. And that has been the goal of 360X from the very beginning, is to enable the work that a nurse or a physician or even a clerk at the healthcare provider site does is similar to whether they do, for example, internal referral or they do a referral across the country. Given that goal, the experiences that we've had through building 360X and now starting to test it, we've tested it last year at the IHE Connectathon. We have 7 vendors that are going to test it at this year's Connectathon and so on, and we're looking forward towards pilots, is that there is a possibility and value in discrete context being transferred using the XD metadata. For those who are looking forward in the future for API-based interoperability and multiple apps being able to hook in a different parts of a workflow and enhancing the user experience that way. I wanted to just to point out that the API, the resources in FHIR called Document Reference and Document manifest are directly modeled based on the XD metadata from IHE. They were meant to be interchangeable, interoperable, and so that is one other advantage of having 360X as a base starting point, is that it will open up future applications and future uses of automated workflow based on other technologies. And finally, my final point is that when you talk about closed loop referral and continuation and continuation of care, a lot of the work that needs to be done in order to automate these processes is within the application themselves, within the endpoint. And so, again, 360X is trying to guide these implementations to what is absolutely necessary to be there in order to be able to take advantage of automated closed loop referral management. And that base, once created and expanded and being available, again, will continue to be useful in the future in new technologies, new applications, if you wish, towards the goal of getting both the provider and the patient in a better place when it comes to the care and the continuation and the ubiquity of information for their care.
Okay, I see Les's hand up, and I think Stephen, you wanted your consensus statement on direct functionality available. Maybe if you can upload that, and Les, maybe we can take a quick comment from Les, and then Stephen has some things he wants to lead our discussion through.
Quick comment is this: there's only so many types of communication that can deal with variable latency on both sides of a communications process. Push, wait, process, maybe return later. Without confirmation of the receipt of the message or of the action within a realistic time frame. Pushing the direct protocol so that without regard to the issues in latency that are inherent in it is a mistake, and that it cannot do everything, and that we need to move beyond this protocol to something that it really understands issues of latency and communication and makes this more of a live, interactive process.
Thanks, Les. That's a really, I think, important observation. Sasha earlier made the comment that it would be helpful to know what are the gaps with regard to direct and how it has been implemented and how is it being used, and how should those gaps be prioritized for solving on the part of the vendors and the users of direct. It just so happens that Holly Miller and I led a group that did exactly that work, and this was presented at the ONC. The ONC had a couple of meetings focusing on direct interoperability. So we will post this document, I think, to the website if we can. At the very least, we can put it up in the share drive. But this is exactly what Sasha was identifying as a need. I mean, again, it was developed by a bunch of clinicians, so may not completely, was specifically meant to identify challenges from the clinician's perspective as opposed to the patients or other stakeholders. But I think it goes a long way in doing what Sasha was suggesting that we do. I just wanted to bring this to people's attention.
This is Clem. I'm not at a terminal, so I can't put my hand up, but let me know when I can ask and when I can comment.
You can.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Clem.
Okay. Well, this discussion of direct and the latency and all, I think we need to separate. There's the biggest demand, at least I felt when I was in practice, is to get stuff that's gotten done at another site when it got done. And for that, push is the very best mechanism. Now, that doesn't take away from the fact if you're really doing a dialogue that you need something else. But, man, if everything could get pushed to you, all the results, and especially when they're updated, all that stuff, there's no better way than push. So I'd like to at least, you know, keep that in mind when people are thinking about direct.
This is Cynthia. May I weigh in as well?
Please do. We've been waiting for you.
I concur with that, and I support the need for push, and that makes it much more real-time to the patient.
Great. Thanks, Cynthia. We see Sasha's hand up.
This is Sasha. So I was thinking of some of the work that's been done, and I'm glad, Stephen, you brought up the consensus statement that was put together. I think that could be a really valuable source. Are there, like, should we agree as a group to pick the top priorities from that document, review them, and then focus on our recommendations around those? Do we need to incorporate some patient-centered priorities into the same topic? I guess, you know, I'm kind of envisioning in my head a chart that says, you know, we've identified as the priorities, since, of course, identifying priorities for work is kind of our thing in our name. If our priorities are, you know, for these three things, and then sort of the corresponding recommendations related to those, and I feel like as we have this conversation, I'm still not clear in my head what the three sort of priorities we are identifying related to this are. We've learned a lot about various standards. We haven't really sort of come to consensus on, I guess, aside from maybe today's conversation about context, exactly what the priorities we're making recommendations about are?
Yeah, I think that's a great focus for the next steps, right? Let's look at where those gaps are and prioritize them. I think maybe right after David's comments, Stephen has another document he's ready to, he has as well, as sort of walking through the steps and the functionality in the referral process. And maybe, Stephen, along with this paper, we can use that as a framework to identify, you know, where do we see the biggest gaps and what we want to recommend to address them. David, do you want to comment? And then maybe we can move on to that approach.
Sure. I think one thing we've got on the table is kind of how far can you push direct in terms of increasing the breadth of the content that gets communicated and the degree to which that content can be automatically processed. That's kind of one topic. I think an important one that we haven't talked much about, and I'll just raise it as, you know, just to, so we track it, is what about secure messaging to patients? From the very beginning, direct wrestled with how to get patients on the network or not, and we haven't touched on that one. I think that's still an open and important question. And then the third one, which I suspect we won't talk about at all, but I'll just register it again, is in much the same way that secure, that text messaging has replaced much of email, secure text messaging in care settings is on the rise, and I think it's an open question as to whether direct could be or should be extended to cover interoperability around secure text messaging, given the importance that it plays in many of our institutions. So just those are three broad topics, I think, quite related to the direct question.
Yes, David.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think rather than going to the process flow document, let's get that ready if we want it. But I think given that our time is short, I wanted to raise one other question, and I hope that Ricky is fully with us. After our last meeting, Ricky, you know, and others engaged in an email dialogue about the fact that, of course, direct is one protocol for messaging. as we've heard, built on email standards, built on kind of things that we all know about. But as we're all aware, the technology around us is constantly evolving, and we talk regularly about the evolving functionality and potential use of FHIR. And one of the things that FHIR promises to do or aspires to do is also to support messaging in some ways similar to and in some ways different from what is being supported by Direct. And Ricky and others have recommended that we educate ourselves additionally about the capabilities of FHIR in this regard, again, thinking again about this domain of referrals, closed-loop referrals, care coordination. Clearly, as we've heard, messaging is a key piece of this, and I think we want to understand what are the available standards to support that. So we've actually reached out to some members of the FHIR community to try to bring, kind of in the same way that Dr. Maas brought us, really the big picture regarding Direct, and as we heard about from the leaders of the 360X effort, we're attempting to bring people who are real domain experts in FHIR to help us understand what are its capabilities in this regard as we're looking at the different standards that are available to support this use. So we haven't nailed that down yet. We've reached out to Graham Grieve, whose timing, given insofar as he lives in Australia, is not great for presenting to this group. As he said, this is 2 a.m. for him, but we're working on that. So, Ricky, I don't know if you want to comment on that or flesh out anything from that discussion.
I think that's a good overview, and I think it at this point there are a couple things I'm thinking of. Number one, we do want to certainly get the perspective of the experts. I think Graham would be good. If he can't participate due to timing, perhaps we could find another representative. I think the other thing that's relevant here will be discussion of push, and this came up just earlier in our conversation here. And I know there's general interest in exploring the FHIR subscription resource and push as it relates to clinical health data. But once that basic infrastructure is built out within the FHIR community and the FHIR endpoints, that could also be repurposed for the purposes of messaging, whether it's direct consumer messaging or a more technical definition of messaging that Isaac Vetter discussed at AMIA last week. Which is I'm not going to get into here, but there's the idea of using FHIR for other kind of back-end type messaging. But in this case, I think we'd be talking about the consumer patient messaging, closed-loop referrals, things like that that you already mentioned. So I think that the FHIR subscription resource is relevant here, and I think also getting more information on how FHIR might be used for this type of messaging. So I think you described it well.
Thanks, Ricky. So I think rather than go to the process flow diagram, which again we have posted and is available for people's review, I think what I'd like to do is perhaps plan to assign as homework a review by task force members of both the process flow diagram and this consensus statement document. But what I'm hearing is that we are interested in supporting a number of uses, again, of health IT. This was our charge, and that we've talked about closed-loop referrals as a key use. We've talked about real-time messaging, you know, sensitive to latency issues between members of the clinical care team. We've talked now about secure messaging with patients as an important use. And then what was raised was secure text messaging. So sort of hyper real time, if you will, even more real time than the email protocol that we've been discussing. Those seem to be large areas that clearly support care coordination. as we've identified it as a domain. And it sounds like there are kind of competing standards that are still kind of duking it out a little bit in the marketplace, both of products and ideas. And I don't have the feeling that this area is sufficiently mature that our task force could, quote, pick a winner or even necessarily define how far one would go, say, with direct versus fire, et cetera. But I think that we can identify that there are these key functionalities that we believe need to be supported. There are perhaps competing or complementary standards that will do that. I think there's a lot that we can say about the content that needs to be moved to support referrals and care coordination, you know, including message context, as we were discussing. And there's probably a lot that can be said about governance and what are the expectations around how this will be managed. So there's additional pieces of this discussion. We don't want to, I think, spend more time in this priority use of health IT than is necessary, but I think there's still a lot here to unpack. So as I said, we're looking to have a deeper discussion about FHIR. We've also reached out to a number of folks to have a deeper discussion about the content in particular that is needed to really support efficient referrals. That is to say, an area we discussed last time of what would be expected by a consultant for them to be able to efficiently manage a referral of a patient for a given condition. And we've reached out to the AMA and others to try to see if there are evolving standards or standards that we can support the evolution of in those areas. So those are all things that we're thinking of bringing back to this group over the next one or two additional sessions, that we're going to work on this domain. And I'm interested in people's feedback regarding that approach as we plan for that future work.
This is Ken. I'll add my two cents. So I agree with Stephen's assessment that there's still more work that needs to be done in this area. I'll just put in my straw man recommendation in this area. What I think at this point, what I personally think might be relevant is to identify the probably two tiers of functionality we want in the space. Let's say just basic referrals, and another where there's more structured data that's been identified as needing to be sent for certain referrals and responses back. Basically define those functional requirements and identify where there tends to be gaps right now in how those referrals work with the current proposed approaches, and at this point to recommend that more work be done using the direct-based approaches and also potentially to explore the more API-based approaches. I don't think I've heard anybody basically say we've figured this space out and all we need to do is to promote that approach. I think some of this is getting pretty close to being able to say, hey, you know, if we do the pilots and everything looks great, then maybe we can support it. But it just doesn't seem like it's something that's going to happen in the next month.
So with that, why don't we transition to public comment? I know there are a number of members of the public that have been listening in with us today. Lauren, do you want to take us through that, or Sarah?
Operator, can you please open the public line for comment?
Certainly. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue, and you may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Again, that is star 1 if you'd like to make a comment at this time.
Thank you. And let me just circle back. Is there anyone that didn't announce themselves on roll call at the top of the call? I know Ariane and Ricky and a few others joined throughout. Do we have Andy or Jack, Rom, Scott, Cheryl, Tina, or Victor? Okay. Hearing none, let me just check back. Operator, any public comments in the queue?
None at this time.
Okay. We will close public comment, and I'll turn it back over to Stephen and Ken.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much, Lauren. I do see, David, you have your hand back up.
Yeah, I just wanted to echo what I forget which of you two said it just a minute ago, that we should not be tempted too much by the lure of new technologies when, in fact, the really hard problem in this space is governance. You know, we had the code for direct written long before we figured out how to actually get directory structures in place and agreement on which kinds of certificates we would trust and organizations, I mean, governance around the decisions around how to extend it. Governance is always much harder. So just swapping out for a new protocol is tempting because you think it's going to solve a lot of problems, but you still have to figure out governance. So we should really take that in mind if we make any dramatic recommendations for change. You've got to account for all that governance overhead.
Well, and that's a really good point, David, and I think perhaps another area where we may want to consider making a suggestion. I mean, where does the governance for this live? And obviously this, there's a lot of different pieces of the this. You know, we've talked about referrals, we've talked about, you know, messaging between care team members with patients, texting. You know, we anticipate a work being done on a trusted exchange framework and common agreement for the country. Is that where governance of these things might reside, or is this something that we are going to expect from the community?
Yeah, I mean, my thought is that, you know, clearly ONC's vision for the single on-ramp, as they described it in the TEFCA draft one, would in fact encompass some of those things, and I think that that makes sense, but I would say that's still a long ways down the road. In the meantime, we have entities that have sprung up to address the governance concerns of some of these various approaches, like Direct Trust around Direct and Commonwealth and Care Quality around distributed query. So those entities would still, I think, continue to be operative. But creating something brand new to deal with, you know, a new protocol that didn't fit into one of those other groups is just, it's a lot of work, takes a lot of time, and it's usually much harder than the technology part.
Thank you. I wanted to point out again this document that we prepared and did a little bit of iteration on and have posted on the share drive. And I want to invite task force members to go through and review this. And what I think we can do, Lauren, I believe, is make this available for comments, but not editing. Is that a technical capability, isn't it?
Yes, for the task force members, you mean?
Right, right.
Correct.
So I think it would be helpful if we do that, if we make this available with comment opportunity for all the task force members to look at over the next week or so. And as we said, also that consensus document. I want to say that Terry, you know, as a part of the leadership here and as a co-chair of the USCDI task force, and Ken and I have been trying to put our heads together and figure out how to move from this broad discussion into what might be a framework for some recommendations. And again, as we mentioned, we've thought about parsing this out as looking at recommendations around the functionality itself, the content of these messages that are moving, the exchange standards, and the governance. It sort of seems like there's this natural breakdown into those four dimensions of this work. So we're gonna continue to work on that and try to put that together into a draft framework to bring back to this group. As we said, we've also reached out to folks to take a deeper dive into the FHIR standard and as a complement to the direct standard, as an exchange standard for some of these transactions. And then we've also outreached to, as I said, the AMA and others to talk about one of the content pieces related to the referrals. So I think that I anticipate that our next meeting will be some combination of discussing fire standards, discussing content standards, supporting referrals, and discussing this framework for putting together our recommendations. But I do hope that when we come back, we will all have had a chance to comment on the process flow. You know, what are the key pieces there from different perspectives, clinicians, patients, et cetera. What have we perhaps missed in the flow? And then also a little bit about the prioritization that has been identified for additional usability of direct. And here again, I do hope that that those who are representing kind of the patient individual perspective have a chance to think about that, because again, that document that was prepared was really primarily focused on the use of direct between clinicians. Ken, do you want to add to that as we approach our time here?
No, I think this is a pretty complicated topic, but I think hopefully we'll get to some concrete recommendations pretty soon.
Anyone else in the last couple of minutes remaining? Any ideas about kind of the direction we're going with this? Any thumbs up?
You're going to make sure we have links to the appropriate file share. Send it out to us.
Yeah, Laura and your team will take care of that.
Yep. We'll definitely follow up shortly after the call.
Great. Well, thank you all, and thank you, Louie, if you're still with us, really, and Holly and Basile. We really appreciate the subject matter expertise that all of you are bringing to these discussions, and we're going to try to do our work as a FACA and turn this into some meaningful and hopefully useful recommendations.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.